Hey everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to the VMXL podcast, the channel where we bring to you our content uninterrupted. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us on the VMXL podcast. Today we have a very special guest, our newest team member, Mikael, who is coming on board to support cloud operations.
Hi Stephanie, happy to be here today and with VMXL going forward.
Awesome. Okay. So we're just going to ask you some questions to get to know you a little bit better, to get to know your career and about some of the things that you do outside of work.
Awesome. Let's get started.
What are your key professional accomplishments or milestones?
So I spent my 20s, 10 years working for one company. And, you know, when I joined, I was the first developer and third employee. And when I left, we had grown to a company of about 32, 10 years later. It was BubbleUp, which is a media and marketing company for music artists, but also other businesses. And for them, I built some really cool content management platforms before, you know, WordPress. You know, in 2006, we deployed, I think some like 20 country artists on our platform. You know, everyone from like Gretchen Wilson, Toby Keith, Keith Urban, they had all used our platform at some point. By the time I had left, we had something around 500 websites running on this content management platform called BAMP. You know, we were doing $4 million or so dollars in revenue off ticketing sales, running, you know, off a modified open source platform that I wrote with my team. Was probably my major milestone, is creating a content management platform that still runs the Aerosmith website today. And in the process, you know, doing, you know, 500 other web projects and running a dev team. So that was my 30s, was basically dedicated to BubbleUp. And, you know, it was great and I learned a lot. And when it was time for me to move on, I wanted to explore other things other than web development. So, you know, I joined CGG, which is a subservice imaging company. And what that means is that they can map the underlying terrain of underneath water and underneath land based on the reflections of a sound gun. So they shoot an air gun, and then they have miles of sensors either dragged behind a ship or implanted into the ground, and based on the reflections they can determine the shape of the subsurface to find little pockets of oil so that they can drill down you know, and make money. I joined them to work on an internal team running software that was enabling scientists to actually run these calculations on our supercomputing cluster. We had oil, actually. So that was my first, in 2015 was my first exposure to liquid cooling. We had one of the data centers, of the three data centers in our building. So, you know, CGG at one point in Houston ran the 13th fastest supercomputer in the world, like somewhere around 2013. In terms of raw processing power, you know, because it's a lot of calculations, you know, to get these. Yeah. So you're basically dotting frequency returns on each of one of these guns and then combining them to create possibilities of what it looks like, of what the subsurface looks like, and then analyzing them, like how they all fit together. So each one of these data points, and it takes a lot of computing power. So what they had developed was a giant room, like of these tanks with liquid cooled, and you can find pictures of these online, of these liquid cooled GPU cards. And so, you know, seeing that was really cool. And then being able to write software which allowed the deployment of code, really just the movement of the code to run on these things. What was really cool.
That's crazy.
I didn't do a lot of the actual programming on these machines, but I did, like, just they taught me how to do that. which was really cool. So like I wrote some Fortran 95 code in 2015 to run on these systems because, you know, they're using, because Fortran, you know, despite being completely, you know, ancient, is really good at doing math. And they use it for like in the military for ballistic trajectory stuff and, you know, in geology for seismic data. Side note, my parents met working at a surveying and imaging company in Krasnodar, Russia. So like,
it's like in your blood.
Yeah. So, and my dad is a geologist and my mom is a programmer, right? So it's
literally.
It was a great, you know, and so on my dad's side, we're actually like, there's three generations of geologists. So.
Oh wow.
Or geophysicists. They kind of vary, but basically in the geo field, you know, my dad used to do surveying with my grandpa in like Siberia, where they would map out terrain and things like that. So it was cool to go work for this company. And so while, you know, the code I wrote wasn't really that exciting for me professionally, it was huge growth. And, you know, training with a team in Singapore, you know, just going over to Asia was incredible experience. And so while maybe it wasn't a professionally like revolutionizing for them, it was definitely revolutionizing for me.
Awesome.
And
it allowed you to have all these life experiences that you probably otherwise would not have the opportunity to have, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, that only covers about 12 years of my 20 years of professional experience. You know, I went on to become the CTO of a startup in 2016 to allow mom and pop grocers to compete with Walmart delivery. Carted, you know, we were successful somewhat, and the company was eventually sold to someone else. And right about the time, you know, right a little bit after the time that I left, we were actually profitable, which was cool. But just, you know, at a very small scale, getting mom and pop grocers to switch from physical advertising to digital advertising, which reduced their costs by a significant amount, because these grocery stores would spend like upwards of $40,000 a week on mail out ads. And so when you transfer that to Facebook, you can have a huge amount of savings that you can then invest in a web platform. You can then invest in, you know, in growing your online presence. And actually, you know, the returns for them were positive, and they, you know, continued to do it. You know, on the technical side, it was complicated because the grocery industry is really like a closed system. And grocery stores themselves, they are not allowed to service their cash registers or, you know, their some of their internal network because of the security implications of cash registers, right? Like, and credit card fraud. And as we know, like from like the Target thing that happened back a few years ago, like any vulnerability in the system is crucial. So getting data in and out of it was a complete nightmare in like every case. And so, you know, things like product data, and then, you know, not to mention the labor costs and the labor time of actually creating images. So this was in 2016, really before all this was already done, right? So over the last, you know, wow, that's been 8 years. Over the last eight years, you know, pretty much most products have been, you know, there's a picture of them somewhere because someone has mapped it. Well, back then there wasn't. And, you know, so we had to send teams in to, you know, with UPC scanners to create image product images and import them all in. So I think there professionally, it was large scale implementation that was that would be my milestone, you know, getting grocery stores on this platform and getting their products in there.
I mean, you basically set the foundation, right? So it's almost like thanks to all your hard work.
I mean, so we were at the same time, there was Instacart that was starting to do the same thing. And they actually were the ones that were successful in going large scale because they went to larger retailers. And, you know, for us, you know, our little Alabama company, you know, we did get a lot of rural Alabama business, and that was cool, but, you know, it didn't translate into, you know, being trusted by large stores to implement this at, you know, a huge scale, which I think the ship model, you know, they came out of Birmingham too, about the same time. They were a little bit before us. And so their model of you know, having shoppers actually shop for you and, you know, deliver on for this mom and pop groceries, because then they don't have to do anything. They can just switch to digital marketing and take all the savings and then allow third parties, you know, to do those components for them. So it
kind of reduces the overhead, the headache of planning and the logistics of it all, which I think was the hardest challenge.
It definitely is. So when, if you do online ordering, you have to then consider things like extra staff, you know, who pulls the orders, you know, try picking produce for people, you know, is like a thankless job. Because give them good produce, they're like, okay, cool, we expect that. But any kind of, you know, imperfection, which normally if you're looking at like fruit or whatever, you're like, all right, well, it's got a mark. Okay, I'm cool with that. But if you're not the one making the decision.
I'm totally guilty of that.
Since then, somehow, you know, it's kind of been overcome. You know, they've, but for independent grocers, it was a huge learning process.
So that's a really interesting career path. I mean, what motivated you to like come to where you are now, you know, director of architecture?
So, you know, in my first 10 years, we were some of the first people on AWS doing massive deployments. Like we followed Netflix. We were like 1/10 the scale, but we implemented scaling, you know, first through third party things like RightScale. And that's just like an automation tool that was in the early cloud days, worked with AWS web services. And it allowed us to scale servers. It allowed us to bring more machines online when we had demand and take them down when we didn't have demand. And so I guess I was always kind of, I've been in the cloud usage business since the beginning. And in a way, this is an evolution of the, okay, well, I used other people's clouds. Well, cool. Now let's build our own. And, you know, in the time since then, my career path has taken me on really new technologies. And that's been my goal in most things that I've done. Like I will make a decision on employment based on, am I going to learn something new? Is this going to be something that that can technically enhance my knowledge and that, but that I can offer value to, you know, through the things that I've done before, which is implement cloud on other people's servers. And now I get to implement it on ours. You know, before my time with VMXL, you know, I worked with Hedgehog, who is a great software defined networking company that, we implemented automation on the networking side. And so that was the side that I hadn't done before. And so for us, I've used other people's liquid cooled solutions. I've, managed other people's data centers. And so now, it kind of culminates into what we're doing now, which is not just data centers, but these edge CPAX units that, you know, can run anywhere, be air gapped and provide your processing and compute power. And so the challenges with that are really cool. And I think we're well on our way to solving them.
That's awesome. So how would you describe your area of expertise or specialization?
Automation, cloud services. I mean, I've written code in a bunch of languages, probably somewhere around 20. So, but when you do 500 clients for a media company, like you work with all sorts of things, you know, everything from Perl, which, is old, but so is Fortran. So is, to modern things like Rust or C Sharp, less modern, but, C Sharp or, React on the front end, or some of the cooler new stuff like Vue and Svelte, which are like front end frameworks written in JavaScript that help you build websites faster by implementing like pre-existing components. I'm more or less a jack of all trades, willing to learn new things. And in the time before now, I have implemented a lot of cloud solutions. Going back to my decade at BubbleUp.
I love it. It's also great because I feel like compared to other engineers and developers in your field, you also have a lot of marketing experience. And so it's very easy for me to talk to you because it's like you kind of understand how to talk to me in a way that makes sense. And I very much appreciate that. So thank it's you.
I think it's a side effect of having tried to run my own company. So, which, you know, I did before joining Hedgehog was, you know, I had an idea for a, that people wanted to protect their privacy, but they wanted to still be able to monetize it. I think that kind of prepared me to speak to all people, because you have to, you have to be able to communicate in a language that people, people can accept. Otherwise it's not communication. It's just, you know, talking with a megaphone, and, or you might as well be talking to a wall, right? It's not, it's not really communicating.
No one's like actually resonating or hearing what you're saying. You're just talking at them, not with them.
And I'm not saying I'm perfect. Yeah. Like I make plenty of, you know, plenty of mistakes in the communication group, but it's an effort.
So speaking of that, are there any specific challenges that you've had to overcome in your career or personal life?
Oof. Well, I mean, as a kid, I moved from southern Russia to America, which was quite an adaptation. Had our own watermelons and our own potatoes on our dacha. You know, I was laying brick when I was seven, because not because I, my dad like wanted me to perform child labor, but because I wouldn't leave him alone because I wanted to be a stonemason. Yeah, and I like forced him to teach me how to lay brick. I was a weird kid.
It's fine. You've got to learn those life skills.
So we moved to Alabama. I love it here, but you know, so it was an adjustment, but at the same time, like the biggest thing I think was cars. Cars was an adjustment. Like, we had public transportation. I took the train to school like in first and second grade on my own. Like, so to come to, you know, so overcoming the challenge of not being able to get myself places without vehicles or adults was, I think that was my first big milestone to overcome.
English.
English was definitely an issue. I couldn't pronounce the letter, E, like in sheet. So like when I would ask for a sheet of paper in third grade, I would pronounce it shit, which was not great, and I got made fun of a lot by my classmates. So yeah, the sound E was another impediment.
But you overcame. It's great.
I did.
No,
yeah.
No one could even tell.
So professionally, I think it's something that we all passion. It's preserving passion in what you do. And I think that's a challenge that, you know, it's incumbent on all of us to make the world a happier place, is to try to be enthusiastic about what we do and find enthusiasm in the successes and the connections, you know, that we make. And it's a constant battle. You know, to make sure that the, you know, because where enthusiasm lies focus, and you know, you really have to have focus, and if you're lucky, you can get the enthusiasm.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And are you actively involved in any professional organizations or any community organizations outside of work?
I was until recently running, you know, Birmingham area software enthusiast meetup. And now my buddy runs it, and you know, so I still participate in our community events for, you know, we're networking local software professionals, both, you know, to help younger, you know, entry level people, as well as, you know, provide continued education by hosting sessions and by teaching certain, you know, sessions like things like Kubernetes implementation, those kind of technical talks. We're also, you know, I'm one of the co-organizers of DevOps Days Birmingham, Alabama. We actually may not be able to do an event this year. So, but if we are, it's going to be April 16th through the 18th. Or possibly move it a little bit later, but honestly, we're 14K in the hole right now on sponsorships. So it is likely, it is at the very least being moved back to a different date or a different venue. But yeah, we've run it, you know, the previous 2 years, and we were able to have some extra money from those years and, you know, be profitable. So it kind of gave us a little bit of a cushion, but man, running conferences is hard.
No, I think that's fantastic, because I think having more meetups and just more educational opportunities is really key to get people more active in the tech space. I feel like tech's becoming a very important part of our everyday lives, and there's not enough people that really understand, you know, the code that goes into it, or even the hardware that goes into it. I mean, I myself am guilty of that. I didn't really realize or even think about, you know, the data centers or GPUs and FPGAs and how it factors into everyday life until I joined VMXL. So I think that was something
that. I think that story is yet to be written on all the different possible, you know, implications of how we're deploying FPGA specifically. And there's all the use cases have yet to be discovered, and it's kind of an exciting time as we, you know, as we deploy it in more areas.
For sure. Yeah. There's a lot of things on the roadmap that I'm very excited for. So I do hope that in the coming months, we'll see a lot of exciting things coming about from everyone, actually, a lot of community projects. Do you have any other interests or special hobbies outside of work that maybe shift your perspective?
I like to pretend I can work on cars.
Yeah.
Okay. I spend a lot of time under the hood working on cars, both to improve performance of my cars, but also to like fix stuff. Because, like, for example, my 2014 Charger that you know, I'm about to hand to my daughter, who is turning 16. so just yesterday, me, her, and one of my friends changed the engine mounts underneath the vehicle.
Okay.
Which is a painful process. But, you know, so I think that the physical engineering work of, you know, replacing parts, of making sure things work together, yeah, as a software guy, it, you know, I think it connects me a little bit to reality. Like stepping out of away from my desk, and, you know, just like going to the data center, going, mm-hmm. you know, under the hood, to, I guess, see the impact of technology on the real world, and, you know, kind of identify with like some of our team, like Alex, who has to go and do this, you know, with our hardware. Every now and then I jump out of airplanes. That's fun. How has it shifted my perspective? I guess it's given me a higher viewpoint, but otherwise, yeah, but it's back to the same thing, right? You have to like get away from the desk to see yeah. life, to enjoy it. And, you know, whether it's from the sky or from a mountain, you know, or, you know, your butt in the sand on a beach somewhere, it's, which is also
great. In the world around you. Yeah. I love that. I also like to jump out of airplanes. So we should definitely plan a company. Yep. Company.
Absolutely.
I'm going to cut it off here, and thank you so much for your time and answering all of the questions and letting everyone get to know you.
Thank you so much for listening and making it all the way till the end. We hope this episode was as informational and educational for you as it was for us. Be sure to follow us on all our social media at VMXL. That's VMACCEL. You can also sign up for our newsletter and get early access to our resource hub by visiting our website at www.vmxl.com. Until the next episode, take care.